ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 56, Big Talk, Small Machines. Welcome to the Mini PC Podcast. Dor, hey, I don't think we've been face-to-face in a while, at least virtually. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm not going to say fantastic, great, or exceptional, or, working, living, wifing, fathering, trying to stay sane, you know.
Well, technically, I am not in the country.
Oh.
Can you solve that riddle?
Okay. Technically, you're not in, you're in Puerto Rico.
Well, no, I'm actually on Indian reservation.
Okay.
So they have I'm in Green Bay and there's a resort casino, blah, blah, blah. I don't even know what tribe it is, but so I am on site.
So are you going to partake in the local modern day customs?
I actually haven't, this is my second week here. I haven't been to the casino. I'd like to just go check it out, but, being that I have so little money, I don't want to, risk losing any. Unless I could play blackjack so slow, it makes sense for me to get the free drinks.
That was always my goal whenever I went into a casino, just be active enough to where they bring me beverages.
But, very cool. Tomorrow I do, actually, my Monday routine is I take three different aircraft to get here. Starting at 5:45 a.m. and I get here at 12:15 p.m.
Very cool. Anything else cool going on with you?
I much less cool than when I was unemployed because then I had lots of free time to do cool stuff. All right. So in the mini PC world, you probably saw my post on Google Plus on the Hughes Compound Southern Command, the Southern Outpost, which is the lawn shed. I put a 20-foot PVC mast on the back of the lawn shed for my PiaWare setup.
That was your... I thought it was just a random picture. I didn't think it was actually your place, but yes, I did see that.
So, I don't know if it's the Florida heat or the wind or a combination thereof, but, I got home and Friday last week, I'm looking, I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, oh, tell me that's the mast. I'm like, I got to go back there. And of course, I can't go back there with my wife around because she'd be like, honey, what are you doing? What is that? Did that fall over? So, got to be a stealth activity. So I got to go back there. And the only thing I'm really concerned about, because the PVC is super cheap, is there was a 50-foot active USB cable in there, which not that it was expensive, but, it's a good unit. It's been serving me well. And I hope that didn't, meet its demise in the 90-degree kink.
Right. Yeah, I would have probably said something like, honey, do you need your nails done? Or something like that. Just try to get her out for a little bit. Me on the mini PC front, it's just, it's been mostly quiet. I will say the Raspberry Pi 3 running Diet Pi with Octoprint is running flawlessly, except for I still can't get the camera to work. Not exactly sure what I could have done wrong.
Are you using a webcam?
Yeah, same one that worked when I installed the Octoprint official SD card image. It worked fine.
Okay, and so this is off the Diet Pi, right?
Yeah, and I did notice a couple differences. Like when I use their official SD card image, by default, the web was over port 8080, mm-hmm. to where you just went to the IP address. With this install, I have to go explicitly to port 5000 for it to work.
Okay.
Also, and that is like more of the default settings with Octoprint. Right. And a couple of the folders were not correctly filled out either. Like they call it the checkpoint path, the place where it expects to see updates downloaded to. So I had to put a couple of those settings in. And the only thing I can think is the base Diet Pi installation is so trim, is so lightweight that they really don't install anything unless it's absolutely mandatory. Technically, webcam's not mandatory for Diet Pi. Also, this is the very first version of Diet Pi that supports Octoprint, right. So I really do expect in a version or two for it to be fixed. So I'm just going to wait it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, have you installed Pushbullet or any plugins?
No. What I did was I paid, I want to say $5 maybe, on the Android market for Printoid, Printoid premium version of it. It has what I consider to be basically a gorgeous interface on my phone to control, manipulate monitor my printer. Also gives me notification when prints are done.
Oh, that's cool.
So I downloaded some
app. I don't remember what it was, and I guess because I'm saying some app, it must not have been incredibly useful or engaging.
Well, I was told this app has went through some major overhauls, so it might have been the free version of this app a while ago when it wasn't as polished. I can tell you right now, it is, for the price, it is extremely polished. I would honestly would expect this guy to want to charge $15-$20 for the app.
Oh, wow.
Is that, I will say, good. It does everything you can imagine and 20 more options you never thought of when it comes to controlling your 3D printer via your phone.
Yeah, and that's one of the beefs I have about setting up the 3D printer, like when you're doing bed leveling. You don't have auto bed leveling, do you?
No, sir.
So when you're doing bed leveling, you know, you want to move it around, move the heads around, that kind of thing. Another problem I found with bed leveling is you might have a little bit of, you know, plastic snot on the nozzle. So if the nozzle wasn't perfectly clean, so then your height adjustment's going to be off. So you may want to do it with a hot nozzle to make sure, you know, you might want to heat that up just to get stuff off it so it's clean.
Yeah, and in at least this interface, it's very easy to either drag the slide up and you see the numbers change as you slide. It doesn't take effect till you let go, or you can just click on the hot end image, tap that, type in your temperature, hit okay, and then it will set that temperature.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of it. And the only other news I have is I will say did order a Rock 64 board. I was going to order one 2 weeks ago, Rich. That's the whole gimmick.
Uh-huh.
But every day I was going to their website and they didn't have the 4 gig version available purchase. I want to say 2 days ago when I went there, because somebody said, hey, Dor, what do you think of this? And I said, well, I think it's great, but you can't get the 4 gig board. Then I clicked and I clicked, oh, crap, order now. So I do have that ordered. I will say, again, I have extremely high expectations. It's going to be very hard for this board to surpass what I expected the capabilities of it, because I will say, the Pine 64 is a gigantic board. It's like twice as big as a Raspberry Pi. 2 gigs of RAM. I can tell you for the buck, bang for the buck, I want to say it was still less than $35. 2 gigs of RAM, really, really, really close to a usable desktop mini computer. This thing has 4 gigs of RAM. I expect this to run remarkably like a desktop. After shipping, I want to say it was $60-something. So it isn't cheap.
Okay.
But you're getting 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, who has 4 gigs of RAM?
There might be one out there that has it, but I don't know of it. Or it's an Intel board, or it's like a $200 board.
Yeah, the only other thing that I know is that's 4 gig is the original up board. And I don't know anybody that's 4 gig. Which begs the question is, all right, so with the Rock Chip 64, it's got USB 3.0, Gigabit Ethernet, eMMC. I mean, that's the big triple play in my mind is what I want to see. What are you going to do with the 4 gigs?
Okay, well, really quick, going to my favorite link that I don't go to many links over and over again, but I do go to the Wikipedia wiki comparison of single board computers page, then I can sort it how I want. More than 2 gigs of RAM, it looks like there's only 7 boards or so. One is the Udo x86 Ultra Intel board. That's going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
In a NVIDIA Jetson TX1 goes up to 4 gigs of RAM. We know that's not cheap. PC Engines, which does have an x86, that's not going to be cheap. PC Engines, again, another one. PC Engines are the people who supply a lot of the firewall.
The PFSense?
Hardware. PFSense, thank you very much. And then there's one called Armstone, 4 gigs RAM. I never heard of them before. Firefly RX, never heard of them. That's a Rock Chip. I've heard very bad things about Rock Chips. Tron Smart, another Udo x86. Looking at them, I can pretty much assure you none of them are even remotely close to being $60.
Right. And so you're adding the shipping on, which is reasonable, but is it $44? is it $44.95 for the 4 gig, and it's like $34.95 for the two and $24.95 for the one?
I want to say it was $50.
Oh, okay.
To buy it. I mean, I can go there right now, literally just click on the store, because that was one thing. If you just go to pine64.org, they have it all just sitting there. It does say $44.95. So that meant I spent almost $20 in shipping.
Ouch.
Well, you know, I'm honestly not mad at it.
You're getting more than one?
Just because. Right now, I just ordered one. I keep telling myself I'm going to go back and order a second, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, because I quick looked at, I'm like, wow, that's a fantastic board. And then I looked at the Odroid XU4. The Odroid XU4 from Ameridroid, it's still $60-something dollars, I think.
Yeah, the biggest difference is that Odroid XU4, I will say, has, I don't want to say has to have, but it has a what I believe to be a higher possibility processor. Because it's a Samsung Exynos, I believe, octa-core 4-high, 4-low processor, which should be doing a lot of higher-end things better. But this thing, honestly, I really have maybe higher expectations than I should for this thing, but I have very high expectations for this thing.
So back to the question, 4 gigs of RAM, what are you going to do with it?
Well, first off, my normal thing is just to test it as a desktop, like a portable in my pocket desktop, like experience, see how close it can get to that. After that, I always throw on a emulator, see how far I can take it. Can I emulate the harder Nintendo 64 games? Like, I want to say it's Mario RPG, Zelda Ocarina of Time, Star Fox 64, Donkey Kong Country. Can it play those games clean? And if it can, then I usually try some PS1 games. I don't expect it to be able to play stuff like PS2, but I might give it a shot.
Huh.
Yeah. And then after that, that's when I just throw like random things at it. To be honest, it's never going to overtake, no matter what it does, the Banana Pi Pro in my life. You know what I mean? But I could see using it as a server for something else. I just don't know what yet.
All right. So we talked about this during the day. And again, I have mad love for the Banana Pi Pro and, you know, I was going to say Octoprint DiaPi. Those are two things I'm just like in awe of. So I didn't even remember the IP address of my Banana Pi Pro. And I SSH'd into it and says, hey, last time you were here was April 19th. I'm like, crap. I mean, that's rock solid to me. That's just amazing. So for those of you that haven't heard 100 times before me mention this, the Banana Pi Pro is, or is it Banana Pro? Is that what it's properly called?
I believe technically when you go buy it, it's Banana Pi Pro, but I always call it Banana Pro.
Okay. I'm running Crash Plan, and so it has a SATA port, and I have the SATA port connected to a 4 or 5 terabyte drive, I forget which, but big honking drive, and I'm running Crash Plan on it, and that thing just runs. It's just beautiful. And probably the last time it was down might have been I had a power outage, you know, and I had a power outage for a significant amount of time that my data center in a drawer went down.
Gotcha.
But mad love for that thing. It's probably incredibly underutilized. I think I did top on it and, you know, just a few percentage of the CPU was running. You know, occasionally I saw Java spike, but that was about it.
Yeah. I cannot remember honestly. And I'll say this, that to me is one of those indicators. If you forget the IP address of your mini computer, it must be running pretty damn good, is what I'm going to say. I honestly can't remember mine either. I was going to log in and see how many days up it had, and I just can't seem to find the IP address. And I don't want to do an Nmap scan during a show because, you know, that can't be good for my network.
Your router doesn't list everything?
Actually, you're right. It should, because I do have it in my, what's it called, my reserved addresses. So let me go take a quick peek because, yeah, it's fun to play with them, but it's even better when you don't have to worry about them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that, I don't want to say is truly a rare thing, but in this day and age, it seems like anything you get, whether it be your phone, you know, your Raspberry Pi, they're all going to require some level of rebooting, attention, working, or whatever. I believe if I just do uptime, yeah, uptime command, 209 days, 1 user load average is 0.25, which is low. So I'm not even taxing this thing. It does show my last login was July 20th. So I did log in, and I believe I just logged in to see if there was a update.
Yeah, I haven't seen an update there. I don't think there's been an OS update in a long time. And I'm talking more than a year.
Well, yeah, on mine, I'm not running DiePi. I'm actually running Bananian. And it was only because I really wanted to build the server myself and see how good I could get it. And with OwnCloud, it was not simple. It was not easy. I was able to do it, but it was painful.
So that's funny because I'm running Bananian also, and there hasn't been an update, and more because I was doing the crash plan, and crash plan is a bit of a hack to get running. So yeah, there was no checkbox. Boy, if they did crash plan on DietPi, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. See, now I will say, to me, it does say there's important changes. There's packages to upgrade, U-boot. A kernel image update. Bananian tools will also be updated. But yeah, I'm going from 1508 R1 to 1604 R1. And right now, no, not going to do it. I'm going to George Bush it. So I'm just going to hold off on that update because right now I just need this server up, period. So I'm just going to not touch it. And I will say, yes, I do have one port exposed to the public. I can tell you nothing bad has happened to it yet. The rest of my network, I completely trust. I audit everything. I have all my logs being shipped off to a different device that, you know, I basically have access to. That's it kind of thing. Nothing's ever been on it. Nothing's ever attacked it. I do see some failed login attempts. I did try to put fail to ban on it before, but there's no way to fail to ban via a web login page. So I just gave up on that. Whatever, because SSH is not exposed to the public. Yeah, just rock, unbelievably rock solid. This thing is, I have computers at work that don't last this long.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so far, it's the best mini board. And it was more at the time, and it still cost more than a lot of other boards. But my logic is if you just need something unbelievably rock solid, it's really hard to beat. And I would love it if I could say that about the Rock 64 in a couple months or a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, looks like the Banana Pi Pro is still around $50.
And like you said, that is definitely a go-to device for me. Gig Ethernet, right?
Oh, yeah.
Gig Ethernet, SATA port. If it had eMMC, I'd be in complete love.
Well, when this board was originally made, EMC wasn't really close to popular, and USB 3 might have been out, but not even close to popular. So it has USB 2, a real SATA port, which is the reason I got the SATA port connecting external drive, maximum speed, maximum efficiency, easiest to clone image, easiest to replace, and a gig NIC. Built-in Wi-Fi, too, with a little an antenna on it. So right now I just use the gig NIC and it just works fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm doing the same. And actually, a couple of my devices. So the Banana Pi running crash plan, the Odroid XU4, and I think that's it. I have NFS running on all of them. So for my VMware, my home lab, I'm actually using them for storage also. Everything's gig networked. Hardwired gig Ethernet. I may have a performance issue getting through the router that separates out my home lab network, but so be it. But I just thought it was very cool. It just found them, mounted them. I'm like, whoa, okay, I guess I can use that. So my SSD internal storage that I'm using on the NFS server, I just have the VMs and I moved all of the ISO images off to one of the Banana Pi or, one of the Pi devices I have kicking around. Wanted to circle back to that Pine 64 Rock or Rock 64, whatever it is. The only dig I would put on it is it only has one USB 3.0 port, whereas like the Odroid XU4 has two USB 3.0s. So if that really matters to you, I'm not sure if your performance drops if you go through USB 3 hub, but that could be a factor.
I would expect it would, but I don't know how much it would affect. But bottom line, if you need multiple drive high throughput, then yeah, you really have no choice. You have to get something else, is what I'll say. But the one question you didn't ask me was, what operating system am I going to put on it, or do I hope to put on it?
Well, it sounded like RetroPie.
Well, for the video game stuff, but when I try to use it as a desktop, the dirty secret is, I mean, I'm going to install their suggested Ubuntu or Debian flavor, Ubuntu Mate flavor, whatever that they have, and give that a spin. But the one I really am going to try and really try to use is probably Armbian. Armbian does two things I know of above and beyond, is the only words I can come up with. One, they do take security a little bit more seriously than it seems like virtually any other ARM-based OS. So like, as soon as you boot it up, first thing you have to do is change the password. You have to change the password. It won't let you not. You have to change the password. But the other thing I really do like is they actually do some video optimization to try to make things run a little bit snappier, a little bit better. And I can tell you, when I ran it on my cube computer from the Israeli company, the 2x2 cube, I was shocked. I was blown away. I was utterly impressed at how snappy that desktop was. When I ran it on my Banana Pro, because I did run it a little bit there, I was, again, it literally was like they were magically getting more performance out of the hardware than I expected to. On the Pi, to me, it was definitely better than the Pixel desktop all around. It wasn't fantastic, but it was definitely better. And I believe I also tried it on the Odroid C1, not the C2. And again, Armbian, when you want a desktop-like experience, is really difficult to compete with. But for other things, if you want dedicated servers, mail servers, file share servers, there's nothing easier than DietPi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, DietPi, it's so simple. I don't know about you in the tech world, but quite often I'm like, oh, well, I'll just do this. And then doing that, where you think it's a one-step, I have to update this first, then I have to do that. Then all of a sudden, it's a 40-step process where you thought you had a one-step simple solution to a problem. And that drives me crazy, because I often find myself in that. Whereas with DietPi, it's, you know, run the image, boot it, and then check off the box on what you want installed, and it runs.
Yeah, there might be just a touch of post-install config you got to do, but it's the kind of thing you would normally have to do anyway, so it's no worse.
Yeah, I've been beating my head trying to install something. This isn't a mini PC thing. This is just a quip. And it's Ruby on Rails and this and that. And I was finally able to do it with Docker, and except I had no way to authenticate. So I got the UI up, and it's a clone of Pivotal Project Tracking, and it's called Fulcrum, and that was forked, and it's now, oh gosh, it's like Code 42 or something like that. And it did work, but I guess because it couldn't send email to validate my, you know, user ID, it kind of died.
I did literally see Code 42 the other day, and looking at their website, I really wasn't sure what the hell they were.
It seems like, I'm guessing, a bunch of guys in South America that write code.
Gotcha.
Yeah, CodeMiner 42 was it.
Yeah, I believe it was the same site. Segue. The reason I saw that site is I was going through looking at a affiliate opportunities to see who we could have as a affiliates on Podnuts, since we lost the Amazon affiliate, and since the Patreon is not as far along at this time as I thought it would be. I literally sent you an email maybe 2 minutes mm-hmm. before we started this show.
Yeah, I was checking it out.
If you go to podnuts.com/deals, we now have new affiliate links. And Code 42 was one of the ones I looked at, and I wasn't sure what they were, so I didn't follow through with them. Right now, I got to figure out why some of the images aren't showing. We have links on there for like Acer, Autodesk, Freedom Pop, GearBest, and there is one there for AliExpress. So if you want yourself like an Odroid, or you want yourself a Nano Pi kind of thing,
Orange Pi,
then you really need to go to Alibaba to get it, or else you're going to pay a fair amount more someplace else. It might take a little bit to get here, but you will pay less. And if you use our affiliate link, we will make pennies, I'm going to say, because the Nano Pi stuff's pretty cheap, so is the Orange stuff. But we do have a little bit of credit in that we have already made. So I want to thank everyone who's been using that. And I encourage people, go back every week or so, set a little schedule up, because I do expect there to be constant ongoing updates multiple times, like even possibly like in a week kind of thing.
Oh, cool. So can I buy a cell phone from the Acer store?
If Acer still sells cell phones, I can't even remember now if they do.
Because a friend of ours was talking about an Acer phone, I believe.
I know Asus.
Oh, maybe it was Asus. Oh, they say it have smartphones. Liquid Z. Okay, yeah, isn't it.
God, yeah. Asus is one of the companies that I have like three of their phones. And I like them because they treat you more like an admin, less like a American end user, is what I say. Really nice phones, really fair prices. They're not the best phone ever, but they definitely respect your ability to own your own device and own what happens to your device kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, hey, and let's see. Was there one more thing I want to talk? No, I think I covered that. Okay.
Okay. There was one link in there that caught my eye, and it's only because I really want to segue to something else. For $4.94 in the notes, it's to The Enquirer. It doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy feeling, Rich. The Enquirer. Intel is binning. That was one of the words I read incorrectly like three times. Binning, which I believe they mean stop. There are Arduino 101 maker board and its Curie model. And this is just a couple weeks after the firm scrapped its Jolie, Galileo, and Edison boards.
Wow. So they're like running screaming from the mini PC market.
They have to. Well, it isn't the mini PC market per se. It's Samsung. Samsung announced last week or the week before, or there was market analysis that said it, but Samsung is now the number one chip manufacturer in the world. I mean, I don't know how long Intel held that crown, but I'm going to tell you, they have like wedges in their head because they've had it so damn long. I think that kind of announcement, that kind of news literally like put some shock into them. I don't think they know what to expect, what to do, how to react to try to get some of this market share back. Because I can tell you right now, it is not a comfy feeling in the boardrooms when you're going over stuff and then you find out that you're no longer number one.
But that's ARM. That's not Intel.
Doesn't matter. They're the number one chip manufacturer in the world. The world is going away from Intel. There are so many people out there now that don't own a laptop, mm-hmm. that did own mm-hmm. a laptop, okay. that did own All a right. desktop, because they're buying tablets, they're buying phablets, mm-hmm. they're buying cheap Chromebooks with Samsung processors in them. Mm. They're hurting. They're literally, I think they're going to have to try to either reinvent themselves or seed themselves in a market that, I don't know, cars, I don't know where else they could work.
Well, they had some newer processors coming out. They're talking about how many cores they're going to have on a chip. And then AMD's like, oh yeah, we got you. And they're AMD, I forgot the precise numbers of the name of the chip, but AMD's like, within a day or two of the Intel announcement, announced something better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but to me, that's chasing the wrong tree. Mm-hmm. You know, you're chasing that, thinking that's the finish line, and being extremely like exaggerating it. It's not the finish line. It's actually a dead end they're chasing. I don't really believe that, but to some degree I do. I don't see x86 processors increasing in sales for the foreseeable future.
Right.
I don't know what it's going to take for them to, but I don't think, I only see smaller, dare I say the word, wearable or mini computer or even cube satellites alone. There's probably going to be more cube satellites launched in 5 years than x86 computers in 5 years or something.
Very well.
I mean, it's that, I don't want to say stupid or crazy, but I think it's that possible.
Oh, I got, holy cow. I got to put a link in for this. I just remembered you talked, I am in Wisconsin and 2 weeks ago was Oshkosh, the air show. So, I have a bunch of buddies, that fly Canard aircraft. I know a bunch of people in aviation. I know a lot of vendors. So it's a whole lot of fun for me to go to the air show because I get to see these people and super smart people doing all sorts of cool stuff. There's a guy from New Zealand and he's got an EFIS and an engine monitor that's based on a Raspberry Pi. And I'll have to grab the link and throw it in for the notes. And it was pretty cool. And what he did is he had a display. He had an LCD display with a battery and he passed it around and we all looked at it. So it was so very cool showing engine dials and gauges. So the concept, originally Mark Spencer was doing something like an open source EFIS, and that's what this guy's title was. And I'm not sure that Mark, and for those that don't know Mark, one, super nice guy. Two, he invented Asterisk, which is an open source PBX. And Mark is also an aviation guy. And so his system isn't as much of that open source build it yourself thing as how he initially started with. And actually, he did start on Raspberry Pi. It's now another processor. I forget what board. I don't know if it was Exynos or something. And but yeah, that was the there's Pis in aviation, which I just thought was very cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing. I don't want to say bad thing. That's the one bad thing about these mini computers is it's very easy for somebody to like create a relationship with a distributor, discreetly, get batches and batches of these boards, not really publicize the fact that, you know, this is what you're getting and then use them and no one really knows that that's what you're doing, you know. I don't want to say it's a bad thing because it's not, but I do like seeing these things get more publicity.
It doesn't seem
like that's really happening.
It's like, hey, what's under the hood? It's a Raspberry Pi and it's cool because it's a Raspberry Pi.
Right. Instead of our custom solution box. That's
right.
Magical.
And what I found out is most of the EFIS guys are running some sort of Linux. You know, what drives the EFIS. It's some Intel x86 board that they're sourcing and they're running some sort of Linux and that's what drives the EFIS. Whereas the Autopilot company that I have their Autopilot in my airplane, in my non-functional airplane that is, and the Autopilot is a PIC microcontroller. And so it's all written in assembly code. And the thing, I know I said this on a prior show, but it was just so cool. Because you never do this in the airplane. He powered it off, powered it on, and it was immediately working. You know, within a second and a half, it was immediately working. Whereas, because there's no OS, I'm like, that's just amazing.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, the good thing is companies like that buying that will bring the price down for all of us. The only question is, you know, how good, how quick, how soon, how much. I think it's only a matter of time kind of thing.
So can we talk about line 497?
I don't see why not.
So this is an open source Raspberry Pi W cloud camera. So not only is it the software, but along with it included is the 3D printable case. So, let's see. My computer jumped as I was clicking on the link.
Sorry, I moved it up to 490, so it's going to be in the notes for the listener. Oh, yes. I do remember this.
Now, what
I will say, everything about this I like, but do you have any you know, worries about it? Or do you just think, bang, here you go?
All right, so one of the things I've been quipping about, there's like two things I'll rail about on a regular basis, and one is tech fashion. The other is I want to have root on everything I own. And if I build my own camera, my own security camera, I have root access on it, and it's not phoning home. And if I want it to do IFT or Huygen or whatever it may be, or Node-RED, I can have it do those things. And whereas I have two R2-D2 type cameras, indoor cameras, and I'm like, oh yeah, and if they detect motion, I can have it upload to like my ISP. I have a reseller account, and it has to be SFTP on my reseller account, but it's FTP on the camera. And like, and there's no upgrade, and there's no way around that. So what I would love to do is maybe do a slight redesign on the case, put an O-ring in there, and use them outdoor. Because I'd love to have something at my fence. Maybe I can see the mailbox or something like that, or going down the driveway a little bit. And, you know, a couple around the outside. Maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be rainproof. I could put it under the eave of the house. But if it's $10 for a Pi W and, what, $10-$15 for a cheapy camera to plug into it,
right?
And I 3D print the rest of the case. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, definitely. I like the idea of it. I always worry a little bit with the Raspberry Pi Zero and anything, because it's only a single core processor and only has 512 megs of RAM. So I always worry about, is it going to be enough to handle it? And I don't mean it insultingly, because I really don't, but I have had it, and I have bared witness to being upset at the fact that it just sometimes doesn't have the juice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just one of those things. Nothing's perfect, you know. But whenever I run a Raspberry Pi Zero, it seems like I'm always a little upset.
Well, the Pi Zero works good. I'm doing it on Octoprint. Maybe it takes a little longer to boot. I'm not sure, but that's okay. I've been happy with that. I tried it with Kodi, and that seemed to be okay, but I was trying to do a couple more things with it, not having to do with it or its performance, just me and configuring it. I'm trying to think what else I've done with the Pi Zero. Right now the big win is Octoprint or Octopi.
Yeah, I mean, simple is good. That's all I'll say. Simple is good, and they make it simple. And that's one of the things I like. I am tempted to look at this. I am tempted to order this, and I am tempted to play with it. The other thing I was a little bit afraid of was, how much is this camera going to cost? How much is this camera going to cost? You know, what are they going to charge, $20 for the camera? I believe the camera was only around $6.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because it says $20 total.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that isn't too bad, is what I'm going to say. So then all you got to do is basically just get yourself a power source, and you're good to go. And I'll say the other thing that I saw about it that I thought would not make you extremely happy was, the solution is not completely 3D printed. They do have a screw in it.
Right, right.
And I didn't think that would go over well.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if you can see my microphone tripod. Here it is. That's the one I printed, and there's a couple of nuts and bolts in there.
Gotcha.
But always my goal is to print every last bit. And if I do have to print something and I need a nut or a bolt for it, I want to have something where the bolt head recesses so it's tool-free.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wish that Harbor Freight had screws or bolts, because I went there and got some stuff, and I thought, you know, could you wait a minute? And so, and I did not want to go to a different store.
Oh, so they don't have the, you know, plastic draw kit with, you know, 10 different.
If they did, I couldn't find it. Oh, okay. I'll say that. I am going to download this and show it to my son, see if he's interested. Because there literally is a Pi sitting here doing nothing, a Raspberry Pi Zero sitting here doing literally nothing. And it's because everything I try to stick on it, I end up not, because, you know.
So
I love the idea of the Pi Zero, but I can't find anything that I think it runs satisfactory on it.
Or a lot of the guys from Tilt said they're going to OLF this year. You're still out?
No, no. As long as Uncle Sam has his foot up my butt, there's no way I can go.
Yeah, I got my 2016 tax bill today, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it ain't happening. Was there any other links you wanted to talk about in there?
I'm just looking. I threw this one in on Plex. Plex is really easy with Diet Pie because it's just a checkbox, but it's an article on running Plex Media Server on a Raspberry Pi or any ARM. So it's how to do the install, and it talks about all the different devices. So they list AnyPie, LeeMaker, Banana Pro, which we just gave mad love to, the Udu, BeagleBoard, Pine 64, NVIDIA Jetson, which isn't that like a $500 board or $400 board?
I believe it's around $400, yes.
Qualcomm Dragon Board, Toradex. That's it. Actually, Toradex is what Mark Spencer's running his EFIS on. That's what he said.
Gotcha. Huh, I don't remember hearing about that one.
So it goes through how to set it up and install. So if you guys are Diet Pie and liking Diet Pie and cool with it, fine, stick with Diet Pie. But this shows you how to do the install of Plex Media Server. And for those of you that don't know Plex, Plex is basically like a home version of Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix plus audio plus pictures. It really is, I don't want to say ridiculously flexible, but it's one of the most flexible solutions you can get. It's like Netflix, but only initially populated with things that you put in it. So your home movies, your copies of your DVDs, you know, kind of things. You can connect it to YouTube browser plugin, and whenever you see something, you simply bookmark it and then it appears in your library just like a normal movie. You can connect with other people, so you can share your library, so you can expand it that way. It really is unbelievably cool. I don't know if I would like running it in emulation, though, because that's what this solution is. It uses Exagear, which is a $25 piece of software that essentially emulates x86 when running on an ARM processor. I don't want to make it sound like it wouldn't work, but I would worry about the overhead in running the virtual environment. I mean, since 93, 95, 96, whatever, when Java first came out, we all learned running a virtual machine, because that's all Java is, requires overhead. You're going to lose. You're never going to get the full performance of the hardware. It is impossible. Now, possibly the x86 version is more optimized, so there might be some kind of, but my logic is try to get it running on ARM, and if you absolutely can't get it running, because for some reason Diet Pie won't install, I guess this is a good solution, but I would be a little worried. Of course, if I'm wrong and some people out there are running it on ARM via Exagear and it's running great, please let me know.
Yeah, that's one thing. I haven't tried Exagear, and I probably go to, I don't know if they have a free trial or not, but I need to give that a try.
Yeah, I would say that for more than a couple weeks, and I just never break down, go to the site, pull the trigger. Yeah. Any of these other things you want to talk about, Rich?
What is this home dashboard? You threw that in there.
It basically tickled the pipe dream I had years and years ago, which was having a screen hanging on the wall. We come down for work. It would tell us what is today's temperature, what's tomorrow's forecast, how is the traffic looking, what do we have scheduled today. Any doctor's appointments, tonight is my wife's favorite show on, kind of thing. I've always had this dream, and I honestly picked it up from Nightwise over at nightwise.com, of having this display around my house that when I walk through, you know, it would know the time of day and it would know who I am and it would show me relevant information based upon that. And this is the same kind of idea is what I want to say. What I don't like is they do not show me whatsoever any real, actual pictures of this thing up and running. And instead, they just show me like what amounts to a screenshot, which I guess is real.
Now, I'm not saying it's a bad Pi project. I think it's a good Pi project. But you know what really how this would work good, I think, is on an older tablet.
Yeah. Well, it would be easier, less work, and probably more customizable in the end. What I don't understand is it's literally using OpenShift, to do stuff.
I never want to be in a corporate meeting and have to say that because I'll say it wrong.
I understand. So I really don't understand why. To me, it's like unnecessarily complex because it shows how it's picking up like BBS news feeds and things like that, which is just RSS, which is just clear text, which is just scrapable, greppable, settable, awkable kind of thing. Yet they're pushing it through a third party service that I don't, that I believe is not free. So it's the thing.
OpenShift,
I love the
offers
idea of
a
it.
Free tier.
Yeah. Well, look, OpenShift is Red Hat. I support Red Hat. More power to Red Hat. $1 billion plus company. Great for them. Anything they're offering for free will eventually not be free. I'm not going to invest an ounce of my time using anything they offer for free.
Because I
expect to pay for something, you know, and I'm sure whatever they have as their next tier up will become more expensive sooner or later.
And, you know, my question on something like that is, why am I shipping it out to OpenShift when shouldn't I be able to do this on my own?
Yes. With things like Node-RED. Shouldn't be hard, difficult whatsoever. Or with simple sed awk commands using a command line based RSS aggregator. Yes. I don't know. But I love the idea of it. The article headline got me, I'm not going to lie, so I bookmarked it. But looking at it further, it's one of those nice ideas. But it is on opensource.com, which is sponsored by Red Hat. So that's why they got their post posted. Because, you know, anything that supports Red Hat, they'll post. Which, it's in their best self-interest and everything. Yeah. Okay. The one thing I wanted to bring up before we left, Rich, is I just did a DDG episode. And if you don't subscribe to that, I'm just going to give a quick rundown. There's a new documentary that's coming out. It's called The Messengers, a podcast documentary. The best thing I'll tell you about the documentary is it's not filled with Hollywood celebrities that became podcasters. It is pretty much filled from top to bottom with people who were doing something else in life and found podcasting. It is talks to a bunch of the big names in the business, like John Lee Dumas, and a couple other people that, you know, have a lot of experience. Well, I'll say it like that. Podcasting is something else to everybody that does it. If you ask 1 million podcast hosts, what does podcast mean to you? They'll all answer something different. The real reason for this documentary is to help people who don't understand what podcasting is, or people who just know the basics about podcasting, about what it is, what it can mean, why it is, how it is, who's involved, kind of thing. And it's only available right now on iTunes. I despise Apple maybe more than any other company I've ever dealt with. And given the opportunity, I'm pretty sure I'd drive my car through the front of their building just because it's Apple. And I swore I would never give them a credit card. Steve C., former owner of Podnuts, asked me if I could support it, mention it. First thing I did was I put up my credit card, opened up iTunes on my dual boot rigs where I submit podcasts, and I ordered the pre-order for this movie. One pre-order is worth 100 sales on day two. And so don't tell me you're going to wait to buy it until it comes out, because then don't. Don't even bother. Don't even worry about it, okay? Just move on with your life and buy 10 more Starbucks coffees that are overpriced. If you want to support this thing, you have to pre-order. And right now you have to use iTunes. And the reason you have to use iTunes is because they want to have as high pre-order numbers as possible. If they offer pre-orders on 2, 3, 4 different services, that means each service will have more diluted numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I believe on iTunes, they're number 2 in the pre-order column. Okay. I would love to be a part of the group that pushes this thing to number 1. So if you can, if you like what we do at Podnuts, if you like what Steve C. started with Podnuts, support him. It's really nothing more than a friend of his who is doing this. Support Steve C.'s friend. Support the extended family. Support all of the Podnutsians and all of the friends of Podnutsians out there. Go to iTunes, search The Messengers Podcast, click pre-order. It's only $4.99, literally like half the price of going to the movies.
Wow.
And then when it comes out, email me, let me know what you think. I can tell you, I already watched it. I had early access to it. A lot of good information, some really nice people, obviously unbelievably nice people on that, and some really smart people, and some really successful people. is what I'm going to say. Like, literally, like, insane success. And it was just fun to watch. Rich, if people want to get in touch with you, where's the easiest, best, simplest, fastest way to get it done?
FlyingRich.com. Yeah, you can see my videos I post on YouTube, my tweets, and probably one of the cool things I like about how things mash up is with Twitter and YouTube. If I like a video, if I click like on it, it's posted on Twitter, which is then on FlyingRich.com. So you can see if I liked a video on something, if we have common tastes, you might see some cool stuff.
Very cool, very cool. I want to thank everyone for downloading, thank everyone for subbing, everyone for sharing, and everyone for supporting those who support you. We will talk to everyone in a couple weeks.
My name is Jeff Houch. I am the host of Podnuts the Computer Repair Podcast, where we take live calls on the air to answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/computer repair podcast live.